Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show. And good evening, everyone, and welcome to this special edition of the For Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Once again, the CONCACAF Champions League review show, second leg quarterfinal review show. And obviously, a lot of sad faces, not just those from Los Angeles, San Jose, and Kansas City, in both Kansas and Missouri, but of course, for those that support the game in this country, once again, the effort to return to the final has been thwarted once again as the Galaxy, Sporting Kansas City, get taken out hard. But the surprise, of course, the San Jose Earthquakes, not to say that, you know, I was going to go against them all the way. I hoped that they were going to go out there and they were going to compete and find a way to surprise them. But at the same time, you know, Toluca seemed to be very dangerous and seemed to be very, very tough at home. And that really wasn't the case this time around, because apparently the Earthquakes played what the manager of Toluca said, basically negative football. You know, you got to do what you got to do to go out there and to perform. And if the game plan works, you got to find a way to get a victory or at least enough goals to move ahead into the next round. And let me just say this. I don't blame Mark Watson for his tactics. I don't. You got to go out there and you need to do what you got to do to force the opposition into a uncomfort zone. And that's what happened. Good on Mark Watson. I understand there are some pundits out there that felt that what Mark Watson did was wrong, and they also agree with what the head coach is saying from Toluca. But the point is, you know, they got to do what they got to do. And you know what happened? They forced extra time. It went to a penalty round shootout. Unfortunately, for the Earthquakes, it just went for naught. But you know what? Out of the performances of the three MLS clubs in the knockout stage, you have to tip your hat to Mark Watson. He did what he had to do. He had to go down there, and he had to find a way to neutralize whatever offense Toluca was throwing. Now, I understand Toluca was without Zina, but my goodness, either they didn't play well enough or they were really affected by what Mark Watson threw at. And let me say this as well. Good on Mark Watson and the Earthquakes for reporting what Toluca was trying to do, because apparently outside of Cruz Azul and Club Tijuana, where they feel scouting wasn't a big need, they were nervous, Toluca. They sounded very nervous of what they were going to face in the second leg at home. So they tried to spy on the practices. And good on the Earthquakes catching it. Good for them for reporting this and filing an grievance with CONCACAF to tell them, listen, you know, these guys, they are trying to, you know, intentionally spy on us. So good for the Earthquakes, good for Mark Watson, good for them to let Toluca know that they're not going to stand for that. That's a good thing. And outside of that, we all know what the typical result is. Three up and three down. MLS is done. First time they've been done in the quarterfinal round, probably before they got into maybe when they changed it from the Champions Cup into the Champions League, because there is no group stage involved back then. It's just you go right into the quarters, and that's it. Obviously, the talk around MLS has been, has the gap closed between the quality of the clubs in MLS as well as matching to the clubs in Liga MX? I think after looking at what's happened, yes and no. Yes, I think the quality of our clubs are a little bit better, and I think they can go toe-to-toe with the Liga MX clubs. But in a way, no, because once again, there are certain disadvantages coming to MLS sides when going into the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League or trying to get back into the final. Now, once again, Real Salt Lake, when they had their opportunity, they did a great job getting in there. They did a great job trying to get to the final, which they did. Unfortunately, it was a Humberto Suazo goal that killed them off. Scheduling for the quarterfinals from CONCACAF is the one area where that's a disadvantage for our clubs in MLS. The other disadvantage is from within MLS. Many people are still saying it. Many people are still bringing it up. Don't believe ProRel is one of them, because that is a little bit ridiculous to assume, well, if you know this ever happened, a real club can actually come up and take these guys out. No, that's not the real reason. The real reason, of course, once again, is the extreme salary cap that we have in Major League Soccer, that we cannot build our rosters properly, the financial part of it, the rules, of course, you know, the young players coming out of some of these academies are leaving MLS and they're going to play somewhere else. Now, obviously, that's great for the national team when you're going to bring in a young player through the ranks. You know, if they're going to go play in Mexico, they're going to play in Europe. You know, that's always a positive for the national team. I'm never, ever going to, you know, shoot that down. But the truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is that these young players are not sticking around long enough to help out the clubs because they want to play now. And I understand that, you know, some of these clubs are a win-now club in Major League Soccer. The Galaxy are, we understand that. I know the Red Bulls are, even though it looks like they've kind of they're trying to find a way to mesh in the young players into the starting squad at a good level, at a good rate. It might be a little slower than normal, but, you know, it looks like they're trying to do that. But there are other clubs that have taken their time, and they've produced these opportunities to get there. Real Salt Lake is definitely one of them when Jason Christ was running the club back, you know, before he took the job with New York City FC. Now, let me just say this. If you're going to slowly build something and not rush the results to try and win a championship, then you got to give Jason Christ a lot of kudos, because that's how he built Real Salt Lake. He got a good core of young and talented Americans mixing up with good, solid players coming from other places in South America, in Europe, in Central America, in, you know, Mexico as well. That's how you create a top-flight club. And that's what he's done. But once again, if you want to have Sporting Kansas City get a second chance, which they're going to get in the 14-15 edition with the Red Bulls, with the Portland Timbers in D.C., depending on who's going to win the Canadian side of things in MLS. If it's not an MLS side, it could be an NASL side. But the truth of the matter is simple, is that, you know, we still have a long way to go. And until those certain things come better for MLS from within themselves, and, of course, the scheduling of the knockout stages in CONCACAF from their offices in Miami, you know, it's always going to be a disadvantage because, let's be honest, Liga MX, which I believe at the moment right now it is the Clausura season over there. The point is, they start early. They don't start beginning of March. I think they start end of January. And they're already 9-10 games into their season, while Major League Soccer has one weekend under their belt. For the Earthquakes, the quarterfinal first leg match at home, that was their home opener. That was their first match. So while it's nice to see a team getting, you know, at least a game under their belt, the point is, that's not enough. That's not enough. MLS sides are always going to be in a no-win situation until they probably, if they're going to go and qualify in the top spot out of their groups, four of the eight groups are filled with at least an MLS side. Five, depending on where the Canadian team is going to be. But the point is this. Until certain things get better financially, quality, scheduling, Major League Soccer sides are always going to get the short end of the stick. Now, like I've said before, the majority of it is from MLS. The only issue coming from the CONCACAF side is scheduling. Because an MLS team cannot gear up and get ready for an important International Cup competition match because the problem is they are not ready to go for a full 90 and to go for that work rate. They try their best. This is not a knock on our guys. This, you know, they try their best. I want them to do their best. But the truth of the matter is this, is that they are not fully fit, ready to go a full 90 International Cup competition-wise. This is not a knock. It's just a simple stated fact. Yes, I want our guys, I want our clubs to progress well within the international stage because, once again, a real league, and this is a real league, but if you want to be picked as the one of the best leagues in the world by 2026 or 2022 or whatever the that year was that when your league wins a CONCACAF Champions League and goes to the Club World Cup hosted by FIFA, that's when it's going to really matter. And that's the truth. Does it sound harsh? I apologize. But the truth is, I want our guys to reach that level. I want our guys to be there when it's finally that opportunity comes. Not just CONCACAF Champions League winners, but the best club in the world. If they do get a chance to face the Copa Libertadores champion or the UEFA Champions League champion, I want to see that. I truly want to see it happen, but it's not going to happen unless these things get fixed. And let's just say this right now. Let's just say the Miami FC situation or whatever the Miami MLS club is going to be called, they finally are going to go with a stadium of their own in 2017. Let's just say for the hell of it, Atlanta does come in. That's at least you have situations where you've got two clubs in Texas, two clubs in Florida, a club in Georgia, and then you got two clubs in Southern California. Well, really, Bay Area, Central California, and one in Southern California because you got the Galaxy and you got Chivas USA, soon to no longer be called Chivas USA, to perform in the same building. Because that's what we have here. Then that would be 2, 4, 6, 7 areas in the southern end of the United States where we can play in warm weather to start our league seasons. And that would be fantastic to help us out that maybe we can start the seasons in the month of February. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a bit painful today. I understand. My guests, once again, Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy Insider, Lisa Erickson of Quake, Rattle, and Goal. Of course, John Jagu on the Mexican end of things. when it comes to this situation with the clubs involved in the CONCACAF Champions League. And joining me very shortly, actually joining me right now, of course, is Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline. Kuhny, we did say last Friday that one goal was not going to be enough to keep Sporting afloat. And even though Benny File Harbor gave some life back into Sporting Kansas City towards the end of the first half, once again, it's just not enough for Sporting Kansas City to make a big dent in the Estadio Azul.
No, it absolutely was not. The Fail Harbor goal lifted us up for 20 minutes maybe until about the 55th minute, so halftime plus about 10. And it was really all downhill from there. Yet we never really looked into it in the second half, basically.
Now, what makes you think that would be the case? Now, obviously, there is altitude in where they are in Mexico City, but was it just altitude, or do you think that they were a little bit physically fatigued? Because I want to be fair to Vermees, obviously. Obviously, you know, they faced a very tough opponent in Cruz Azul, but to be fair, that basically was your fourth match of the season.
No, absolutely. I think there's a number of factors in it. I mean, the fatigue from the entire season, the altitude, injuries, suspensions. I mean, we were more or less before halftime, we were down to our third string left back and third string right back, basically, when we had to move Ellis from right back to left back, basically. We went from our two second string backs to our third string backs in those two positions, basically. So, I mean, if you watch the game, Cruz Azul barely went through the middle on us at all night. I mean, I think the first time they actually did was when they scored their fifth goal. And the rest of the time all night, it was basically down the wings through Rojas and through Fabian. They just killed us on the wings. And I like Jerome. I think Ellis can grow into a good player, but they're not that caliber. They're not able to go against the likes of Rojas and Fabian for an entire game in Mexico City and live to tell about it, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Kronberg looked abused as well. I thought that one goal, he ran off his line to try and cover the near side of his area, and then he gets beat on the far end inside the far post. Obviously, it's one of those moments where you're down by a lot on aggregate, and you're trying to pull back another away goal, which never came, unfortunately. But once again, you see the quality from Cruz Azul, and they just picked apart your guys on the wings.
Absolutely. I mean, you were talking about Azul's fourth and Kronberg again coming off his line. I mentioned it last week with when Opara saved the one off the line that I felt that that Kronberg was being too aggressive coming off his line, and that was just another example of it. There was no reason for Kronberg to come all the way out to basically it was the edge of the 6-yard box on the sideline edge of the six was where he ended up at, and there was absolutely no reason for him to come that far. I mean, Jerome was behind him, but there was absolutely no reason for him to be out there. So it's starting to, I'm not sure if it's still just nerves settling into the starting role or what, but it's starting to become a habit of him overcommitting on situations, and that's not going to do very well with the way we play.
I don't want to really throw in the Jimmy Nielsen situation, because obviously sooner or later you're going to have to retire from the game and, you know, move on to greener pastures, obviously. But do you feel maybe Nielsen probably could have stayed a little bit longer, maybe, you know, after the celebrations to maybe help Kronberg, giving him advice? I mean, I know you have a keeper coach, but, you know, he's been backing up Nielsen for like the last year or two, I'm assuming. So would that have benefited for Kronberg?
I think, I mean, he's been a backup to two of the two of the better goalkeepers in league history. I mean, he was backup to Nielsen all 3 years. Nielsen was here, and before that, he was a backup to Hartman. So, I mean, if it's a matter of learning from the best, he's had some of the best keepers in the league to learn from. So it shouldn't be a matter of needing Nielsen to stick around just to teach him the ropes. He should know the ropes at this point. I think it's just a matter of him needing to figure out his spot. And if he's going to continue to make overcommitments like that, it's not going to be in the starting lineup for long, not when you have a guy with as much experience as Grunbaum on the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that first half, like we said before, that was just absolutely a clinic by the forward who got the hat trick against you, Mariano Pavone. I mean, second minute, it's in, and then 22 minutes later, it's in. And even though Benny, like we said already, gave you some hope, he comes right back in 10 minutes after the start of the second half, and he gets his hat trick. I mean, Pavone was absolutely dominant and brilliant against your guys.
Yeah, no, we really had, as on the wings, we really had no answer nobody really following him on the runs through the middle of the field, basically. Opara and Beisler just were not having their nights. And, I mean, on Pavone's third, Opara fell down or did something. We never got a clear replay of it, but he didn't extend himself into the greater arms of those who want to see him play more than Colin. I think more than anything, it proved how important Colin actually is to this team.
Absolutely. When you lose a guy like Colin to injury or suspension in the Champions League, obviously the experience and as well as being a veteran of knowing what to do on the back line, it's going to hurt you a lot. To be honest, I mean, nothing against Obara or Gardner and even Ellis, but still, though, you feel like Matt Beisler really missed his favorite partner out there.
No, absolutely. He won't say it publicly, but I'm sure he would have. It would have been a bit better. I'm not saying we would have advanced, but I think it would have been a bit better situation if we'd had Colin out there.
Yep, absolutely, and it's just one of those things. Other than that, I mean, it was really disheartening to see the guys, and obviously they kept on fighting, and good for them. They kept on fighting, but to see Pavone finishing off his hat trick, for Mika basically getting an open net, and Christian Giménez putting in that final nail in the coffin, even though it really was at 4-2, it was over. 4-2 on aggregate, it was over. But I have to say, though, Kenny, your guys fought start to finish, and I thought, I know there's no moral victories in these situations, but just to be fair, though, I thought you guys played brave, and I thought they did try their best, and that's all we can really say here.
No, I mean, I can't fault it. I mean, we talk about schedule congestion. The difference between us and L.A. and San Jose, who got a weekend off, L.A. and San Jose don't have the Champions League in the fall when these games would be made up, basically. So, I mean, Kansas City was stuck between a rock and a hard place, either condense their schedule more so towards the end of the season or sacrifice playing time now, and they decided to sacrifice some playing time now. And while the diehards love the Champions League, love the idea of winning it, the average fan is going to be more interested in league. So it's a matter of six of one, half dozen of the other, which ones you want to please. And I think they're going with the regular fan right now, who for the most part is the larger part of most fan bases, the Cauldron, the Empire Supporters Club, all that, we're the minority. So us wanting to win the Champions League, yeah, it's great, but in the end, people are gonna the team's gonna look towards more of the league, where your average American sports fan is going to be more focused on.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and I think there's got to be some more education to the casual fan, some more education to those that you want to make them into fans, that they need to know why qualifying for these important tournaments means to everyone that wants to see an MLS team finally win the Champions League in CONCACAF and get to that FIFA Club World Cup. Once again, like you've already mentioned, your guys are going to have a second chance at it this coming August, waiting to see how the clubs, they fill out those necessary positions, and the draw will probably come maybe around end of July before it gets all underway in August. How are you feeling right now? I mean, obviously, I know you want a second bite at the cherry there, CUNY. How are you feeling about it for this upcoming tournament edition?
I mean, I'm feeling better about it. I mean, while I just talked bad about our reserves basically in defense, that experience at Cruz Azul is, you're not going to get that really anywhere else in MLS or in mostly CONCACAF really. So come August when we're playing in Trinidad or playing in, I don't know, Costa Rica or somewhere, that experience at Estadio Azul is going to be absolutely huge for guys like Ellis, Jerome, Opara, those guys that are going to see minutes in the competition come August.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me throw this out at you. I think we've talked about this a lot. Obviously, it is scheduling. I mean, I'm assuming Liga MX starts well into the end of January, beginning of February, before we even get into the first leg of the quarterfinals of this current edition of the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, what besides the CONCACAF scheduling, what inside MLS do you think needs to be beefed up here?
I mean, that's a difficult question. It's easy to say things like the salary cap needs increased or something like that, but I mean, increasing the salary cap without the American player being level of the American player being increased isn't going to do anything but pay the likes of the Josh Gardners, the Jacob Petersons more money, basically. So, I mean, I don't think there's just one thing that can be done immediately to improve that, bar moving the leagues, moving the schedule so that the U.S. teams have the advantage of being in mid-season form, basically. So I really think there's not a lot that can be done short-term to do it. It's a matter of continuing to do well, continuing to win some games down in Mexico, get draws down in Mexico, get higher placing than the Mexican seed so that you actually host the second leg at home and have the potential advantage of that home game to make up the ground in second. So, I mean, there's a number of things that it's not one thing, and it's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen the year after. It's something that we're going to have to continue to grow the strength of the American player, basically, to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Any final thoughts here, CUNY, before we move on?
I mean, it was fun. It was the Cruz Azul is a very good team. I mean, watching them, and I've watched more of them with the with just scouting them ahead of time. They're a very, very good team as a whole. I mean, the main thing that the biggest thing that drove home for me was, you gotta win. You gotta take care of business in group play. I mean, we talked about it in the fall. We drew Esteli and Olympia both at home. We win one of those games, We're playing the Panamanian team at home in the second leg this past week, and we have a much better shot of advancing in that route. So, I mean, you just got to get the results when you can, and blowing a tying 1-1 with a team who's never won in the tournament at home is, looking back on it, pretty much unacceptable.
Yeah, it really, really is. All right, CUNY, take care of yourself. I'll talk to you during the season, and good luck with the rest of the league, and good luck in August, okay?
Sounds good. Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later. That's Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline blog. Of course, Sporting Kansas City side, as they had a rough time in Cruz Azul, And as we keep on going here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinal second leg review show, waiting on Mr. Adam Serrano, who, of course, they had a tough time down in Cruz Azul in the first half, but they were able to come back and make a match out of it, Adam. That was probably a very tough start to see the Galaxy going down quickly. Not just they went down 3-0 in the first half, but those two quick goals by Ovi.
Yeah, it was certainly quite the experience. You know, wasted no time. They got right on the board 57 seconds into the game. They put the Galaxy down, which is something they said repeatedly they were not going to do, and they kind of fell into that sort of trap. Then a few minutes later, with the team still frazzled, I only get to second after really exploiting that Galaxy high line, which is something, you know, was a little surprising to see, seeing as the fact the team was so kind of frazzled. And then you have a defensive mistake by Leonardo leading to a goal by Dario Benedetto. And, you know, it was all behind the eight ball there. The Galaxy do what they could to fight back, and they get their goal 47 minute. But, you know, it just might have been a little too late. They were kind of chasing the game at that point, and it was just really tough going.
You know, I really thought they had a chance once they got that second goal, that road goal early in the second half. I mean, a great cross there after the free kick. I think it was Omar who headed it across the goal, and Robbie Keane just blasted it in there. And you had a feeling maybe the Galaxy could turn that negative into a positive, because that's how it felt like that entire second half until that fourth goal came from Richard Ruiz.
Yeah, Ruiz found a way to exploit the Galaxy. Were playing three in the back. You know, they had to do that. It was just part of the necessity. And, you know, they get the goal 2 minutes later that was probably coming for them the entire game. But, you know, it was a really impressive second half comeback. You know, they put in Rob Friend, who really made an impact. He was able to bring in a more direct approach. So they were able to send in balls to him. But it was a direct approach that was kind of modified so the Galaxy could still play the game on the ground, where he would sort of knock a ball down into the ground. You know, a guy like Robbie Keane or Janinho Marcelo Sarvis had more space to open up, which created a lot of chances. And, you know, the Galaxy were actually, at the end of the game, really saying, you know, they gave Tijuana a run for their money. If this game had gone on a few more minutes, they think they would have scored.
Oh, I agree. I think they could have gotten that third road goal, and I think they really would have put tons and tons of pressure on Tijuana, and probably they could have advanced. Unfortunately, it didn't happen like that, and the Galaxy lose the match 4-2, lose the aggregate 4-3. What test did Club Tijuana really give the Galaxy in the second leg? I mean, obviously it looked like they didn't seem to click right away back at the StubHub Center in the first leg till maybe, I don't know, start of the second half, I would have to say. What made Tijuana become probably one of the dangerous clubs within Liga MX against the Galaxy?
You know, I think it was kind of a semblance where they were able to kind of pass the midfield, and those midfield members really caused a problem for the Galaxy. And I think that with those midfield members, they were able to, you know, cause pressure, put Juninho and Marcelo Sarvis behind the eight ball, and really cause them problems and create chances. And, you know, they came out to their credit with a frantic pace, and Cesar Farias really had a great game plan saying, we're going to attack from the opening whistle, and that's exactly what they did, and that put the Galaxy under pressure. You know, they really needed to hold firm for that first 15 minutes to kind of get themselves set into the game, and they clearly could not do that, and that led to the loss.
You know, you've been to many matches in Mexico for these club sides. You know, you visit some of these great grounds down there. If there's a comparison or a similarity, what is it that makes these places so tough for MLS sides to get maybe even a fair result to go out and try and get what they need into these competitions?
You know, I don't think the really environments are that much of an issue anymore. I think they know what the difference is, and that's certainly not an issue for the Galaxy playing in Tijuana, which is literally just 5 minutes across the U.S.-Mexico border. So typically when you have places like Cruz Azul, you know, Pumas, Club America, those are all played at altitude, so that's going to cause some problems there. But I don't really feel like those environmental factors caused that big of an issue. You saw some problem with the turf. The Galaxy kind of let those bouncing balls kind of get to them, which caused a lot of problems against Club Tijuana. So that might be an issue, but I think that in terms of the travel, in terms of the venue itself, not counting the altitude or any of those environmental factors, I think that we've kind of crossed that bridge already where that environment is going to be a detriment to our MLS teams.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And once again, you know, the distance between Club Tijuana's stadium, the Caliente, and StubHub Center, it's really not that far away. So in a certain way, obviously the Galaxy got plenty of rest before the bus ride down, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, that's not an issue. I think this is the Galaxy just simply didn't show their best showing in those first 15 minutes of the game, first 30 minutes of the game, and that really hurt them, and that's what led to this loss.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. What else is about Club Tijuana that makes them so dangerous as well, just from your opinion? I mean, it looks like they got some pretty good talented players. I know, besides Joe Corona and Hercules Gomez, who are probably, they might be on the roster for the World Cup this summer. Maybe one of the two will be on the roster for the World Cup this summer. Are we seeing now American players looking for work in Liga MX that's going to enhance their national team prospects?
Yeah, we are. I think over then a guy like Gomez or even Corona is, in terms of this series, would be Greg Garza. He put in a really strong performance at left back for Club Tijuana, going up against Jossie Zardes and really kind of shut him down for much of the game. You know, he had all the difficulty going up against Stefan Ishizaki, which could have been an issue there for the Galaxy. But, you know, he was very good going forward and very solid defensively. And I think he's someone that's going to be on Jürgen Klinsmann's radar for the April 2nd game against Mexico. So I think that that's what you're going to see. You see lots of American-born players, American-based players heading down to Liga MX where they might have different opportunities there. But it's certainly nothing that's going to stop, and I think that you'll see more and more as the years go on.
What do you think Bruce Arena is feeling right now? I mean, not really right now, but after that match, because I think he went in with a solid game plan, but the way Tijuana attacked the Galaxy and their high line, obviously things went awry. But what do you think Bruce Arena was feeling after, not just after the first half, but after the full 90?
Yeah, it was just frustration. You know, he said that it was an embarrassing performance. It was an awful performance in the first half. So I think that was a major issue for the Galaxy. I think that he knows that his team didn't come to play, and I wouldn't be surprised if he saw some lineup changes. I don't think Leonardo will get the start against Real Salt Lake. He's probably going to work his way back on to the lineup, so I think that's going to be a major issue there.
Yeah, it really is. Obviously, the Galaxy will not be in the next edition of the CONCACAF Champions League. What do they have to do after this type of performance against Tijuana? Obviously, they have league play going on, making the playoffs, of course, Open Cup on their radar. What type of things does Bruce Arena need to do to try and re-qualify into the next edition, which would be 15-16?
Yeah, I would expect a really solid run of the U.S. Open Cup. I think that's the easiest way to get this done. You saw, you know, the league play is always a grind, and that's always going to be a major goal for the Galaxy, and I think they should compete again this year for the MLS Cup and for the Supporters Shield. But I think Open Cup represents a real opportunity for the Galaxy. They've gotten a lot deeper than they have been in past years. They've got a little bit more experience. And I think that they should be primed for a very solid run in the U.S. Open Cup, which might get them back into the CONCACAF Champions League for the 15-16 edition.
Absolutely. Adam, you know, I was pulling for the Galaxy, hoping that they would move on to the next round. I think it would have been interesting to see them against Cruz Azul, or maybe even an all MLS. That would have been interesting, wouldn't it? An all MLS semifinal, if Sporting Kansas City and the Galaxy in the same bracket were to face each other. That would have been really interesting.
That would have been a great matchup. It would have been a great matchup if the Galaxy had played Cruz Azul. I think that they were primed to face both teams. They had a they have a very talented team, and they really just couldn't get it done.
Let me ask you this. If there was something that you would want to change either from within CONCACAF or Major League Soccer to maybe help these clubs maybe perform a little bit better in the knockout stages of the CONCACAF Champions League, in your opinion, what would you do?
I mean, we talk about changes. We talk about development in MLS, but wages are an issue. I've heard a lot of talk that the wages from the Galaxy and Club Tijuana 1 through 11 are probably very similar, which is probably because guys like Robbie Keane, Landon Donovan, Omar Gonzalez make so much money compared to what you see in Liga MX. But the gap between players 12 through 23 is major, and it's something that causes what these losses, I think. And when you have those types of players who are unable to, you don't have the same kind of quality because you have a major dip between pulling out a Richard Ruiz off the bench and pulling off kind of a James Riley. So for all of his benefits, that's just not the same type of player. There is that gap there, which is going to cause a problem. So I think until that issue is really fixed, until you start to see more investment, you know, the CBA is going to be an issue. I spoke to Todd Donovan, who's on the CBA committee for the Galaxy, and said that, you know, that's going to be something we can bring up. It's impossible to compete against these teams if we don't have the proper wages to kind of attract talent. So that's always going to be an issue, and until that's fixed, you know, we might have to subsist on, you know, kind of fluke runs, so to speak, in this tournament instead of a sustained push like we see with the Mexican clubs.
All right. Well, listen, Adam, it sounds like you've got a cold there. It's
a lot
warmer in Mexico than it is in Los Angeles?
No. Not different. But it is a lot colder in Salt Lake City than it is in Mexico or Los Angeles.
Well, listen, do feel better. Chicken soup or get some wonton soup, a nice big bucket of wonton soup, and just chug it. And then save the wontons for later.
I will definitely try that. Thank you so much, Daniel.
No problem at all, Adam. Have a good night. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
No problem at all. Not a problem at all. Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy insider, on what happened with the Galaxy and Club Tijuana. But here comes this lovely lady joining me once again to discuss probably, you would probably have to say, out of the blue, the best second leg quarterfinal match in the history of MLS, because the Earthquakes took it to Toluca, forced extra time, then forcing penalties, but sadly falling short. But you know what? Probably the one side we didn't expect to give us an entertaining match. Lisa Erickson of Quake, Rattle, and Goal and Centerline Soccer. My dear, how are you? And boy, we almost had a heart attack, didn't we?
I think, yes, I would say we probably did all have heart attacks. And unfortunately, the Gordon's goal wasn't good enough for a CONCACAF ref fight in front of him to let the Quakes win. So what more can you say?
Well, I will say this. You know, Mark Watson, after everything that, you know, transpired in the first 90 minutes of the match, you really have to say that he was really trying not to just find a way to keep Toluca off the board, but, you know, maybe sneaking in an opportunity to score a goal And my goodness, who would have thought it would be Robert Harden in the 56th minute who glided into the ball as well as getting into great position to leap up and head it past Alfredo Talavera. I mean, that was a sensational goal, and not just a lead on the aggregate, but probably a much-needed away goal.
Yeah, exactly. Ty Harding did that for us, and it's great to see him, you know, he's new to the Quakes. He's you know, it's amazing to see it, really.
It really is. Yes, he did. You speechless?
Speechless. Very much so.
I mean,
well, it was a great goal, and you got to think, you know, Shea Salinas, who is one of the assist leaders in the Quakes, is, you know, making it on it.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Exactly. No, it was fantastic. I mean, and look, I think rightly so. We really thought Toluca was going to have their way against the Quakes after we talked last Friday. I mean, I'm not saying not to say we were expecting them to get destroyed, just that we, you know, we agreed that the quality was more on Toluca's side. But it was a little interesting to see how I don't think Toluca either they were playing arrogantly. I think they were playing a little nervous because did you hear this? And this was on Fox Sports 2 from Brian Dunseth that the Earthquakes filed a complaint on Toluca because I think it was either their second to last or their last training session. They caught a cameraman from Toluca filming their session.
Yep. So, yeah, had one of their employees filming the Quakes for their final session past the 15. Normally, the opposition can be there for 15 minutes. And this guy stayed the entire time filming it. And so, yes, the Quakes have filed a complaint with the CONCACAF Disciplinary Committee. It's a formal complaint in time. And so now we'll see what happens to it, you know. And, you know, CONCACAF is CONCACAF. So the likelihood of them actually doing something, probably not that great. But at the same time, you know, it is out there that Toluca did cheat. They did not follow the rules, and so who knows?
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
And that Gordon goal. That Gordon goal was a real goal.
Yes, yes, I know. Unfortunately, the flag did go up for offside. Even on replay, it showed that Gordon was behind the last defender when the ball was played. That is very, very true. And it's just unfortunately one of those things where it was a great match, regardless of what happened. It was a great match. Unfortunately for the Quakes, they couldn't get the 2-1 lead in the match, which would have been 3-2 on aggregate. And as you know as well, when the match goes into extra time, if tied on aggregate, the away goals rule is scrubbed. So it would never have counted as a second away goal, that's for sure.
Right, but it would have been 3-2 on aggregate, and they would have won.
That's very, very true. Now, talking about the penalty kick situation, when Bush made that big save on the first attempt, I bet you're thinking right off the bat like everyone else is thinking, here comes Wando, he wants the ball, he wants to go first, he goes first, and while I think he took a great penalty, it was even a big save by Talavera, unfortunately, that got stopped, and unfortunately the advantage went away.
Yeah, exactly. It was very sad to see that. And, I mean, you have to credit Toluca on that one, definitely. I mean, those were some really good saves.
Absolutely. And just, you know, powering shot after powering shot. And I will admit, I don't know if it was the third attempt for Toluca or the fourth attempt for Toluca, but you feel bad for John Bush. It looked like he got a piece of it, he saved it, but there was just so much power on the ball. It bounced in front of him, it went off you know, the inside of a crossbar, and then it did cross the whole goal line when it landed and everything. You really thought Bush made a big-time second save. Unfortunately, just did not happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're just like, oh, as you watch it jump up and hit the crossbar and then down in, and you're like, no, no, that did not just happen. As I said, it's Mexico. It was 9,000 feet above altitude. It was what it was. And they had played, you know, the two other games previously in the 8 days. So you can't fault the Quakes at all on that one. They played their hearts out. And when a back line that you're like, wait a second, Cordell Cato is playing right back? He's a right midfielder. And, you know, there's no Bernardes. There's no Goodson. There's no Hernandez. There's no one in there. Like, that back line is just insane. And then when you see who else got put in the starting lineup, you know, Billy Shuler, great start for him instead of Wando or Gordo. So it was for the players that played the start of that game and for the outcome that was part of that game, it is amazing to see what they did.
Absolutely. You know, at the end, in the post-match press conference, Jose Cardoza, the head coach of Toluca, complaining very loudly that he did not like he's claiming, obviously, the negative tactics by Mark Watson in a game like this. Do you think Mark Watson, and obviously this is his first full season now as head coach of the Earthquakes, do you think Watson found a way to not just go toe-to-toe with Toluca, but as well as Cardoza, but maybe frustrating them to no end?
Yeah, I think he did. And I think, I was very skeptical with Watson becoming the full manager, but he's doing an amazing job. I mean, the Quakes have not lost in their last 13 matches. So
You've
got to think, that's pretty impressive for a coach to make sure that he either gets a win or a draw. You know, so in regulation time, let's put it that way. In regulation time, he hasn't lost because, of course, the penalty.
No.
But
no. The
other thing that's impressive about this game is that the Mexican fans, the Toluca fans, gave the Quakes a standing ovation and cheered for them as they left the field.
That is absolutely fantastic to hear.
They were so it was amazing to see that those fans, you know, who hate us, could actually cheer for how well the boys in black and blue did. So I was very excited about that.
No, that's a wonderful thing to hear about. When you get the opposition's fans, when you're in their building, and when they see how hard fought both teams went, including that penalty round, you know, including that penalty round. It's just been absolutely wonderful to finally hear that this club, not just the Earthquakes, but our league is improving even down in Mexico, and they're seeing a club that probably wasn't even ranked or rated high enough to probably, you know, go or have that opportunity to go into the semifinals, because if they would have won, they would have faced Aluenza from Costa Rica in the next round.
Right.
So, I mean, this has been, I think that's fantastic to hear. And I think it's wonderful to hear this when you're expecting probably everything being thrown at them from left and right. But that didn't happen. And, you know, it's great to hear when the opposition fans gives your guys a standing ovation for a hard-fought match.
Uh-huh. Very true.
Yeah. So now that's it until, you know, if you guys qualify through Supporter Shield, Open Cup, as well as you might win the West, top of the league,
yep,
or winning the West, seeing what's going to happen. But,
or MLS
you know,
Cup. Come on, baby.
Yeah, MLS, I was about to get there. MLS Cup Championship. How do you, I mean, like you said now, you didn't think Mark Watson was the right guy to take over, but in your mind now, do you think he is the right guy?
I'm hopefully optimistic. Can that be my answer? You know?
That can be your answer. That can, yes, I can allow hopefully optimistic. I can accept that.
Yay. It's, you know, we've only played one game so far this season for MLS, and, you know, that was a tough, grueling match with Real Salt Lake and ended 3-3 in the last seconds. And so now we have Sporting Kansas City on Saturday, and it's still another road trip with our back line being out. So we'll see. And then we'll come back to Buckshaw where life is better for them. So
wow.
We'll see. I'll be, as I said, hopefully optimistic. It'd be great if they actually win the West again and get to the MLS Cup Final and have to have this MLS Cup Final at Buckshaw.
Absolutely. I don't know if they'll be at Buckshaw, but if the Quakes have an opportunity to try to find a way to get into that final, it would be interesting to see if they can take it all.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd have it at Levi Stadium, if possible. Depends on if the 49ers playing or not.
Absolutely. Well, my dear, have a good night. Thank you very much for joining me. I'll definitely have you back on during the season. I hope you're doing well.
Of course.
Good,
and
thank you so much
for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you, definitely. Lisa, have a good night, my dear. I will talk to you soon, and I'll have you back on as soon as I can, okay?
Sounds great. Take care. Have a good night.
All right, take care. Thank you, you too. And that's Lisa Erickson from both Quake, Rattle, and Goal, as well as Centerline Soccer with Robert Jonas, as we talk about probably, you know, it didn't look like it was going to be one of those top matches in the quarterfinals. But I'll say this, that actually turned out to be probably, if you're an MLS fan or a fan of an MLS team, that was in that Champions League, they were the best ones out of the three. Even though there was some hope coming from the Kansas City game, the point, though, is that, to be honest, it is, you know, seeing the Galaxy getting torn apart like that in the first half and then seeing Sporting Kansas City getting torn apart throughout the entire game, that's a tough pill to swallow, everybody. That's a really, really tough pill to swallow, and you just don't ever want to see that happen. And it's just one of those things where it's just if you're an MLS fan, but at the same time, you can definitely, if you're an Earthquakes fan, you're hanging your hat on that performance from your guys, frustrating Toluca to no end, and it just goes to show you that even though you're considered not to go far, they went further than the Galaxy or Sporting Kansas City, and it's just one of those things where you have to tip your hat to the Earthquakes because they could have won that match. They were a bad call taken away from it. But at the same time, they didn't quit. They didn't pout. They kept on going. They buried, you know, they put their head down, got back to work, and they went straight for the penalty round for the shootout. They could have been, they could have gone ahead. They could have definitely gone ahead. And they could have done it big time. They really could have. And you just got to say, once again, there's certain things that you would love to see changed, certain things that could have been different. But to be honest and to be fair, great matches. If you follow a Liga MX side, Toluca once again was big. They played strong. They played hard. Cruz Azul showing their dominance, why they are leading the Clausura season in Liga MX. And also, you have to say that, you know, just a great, great opportunity as well for Club Tijuana, how these clubs are just doing a job out there. And it's just absolutely fabulous that the quality of these clubs in Mexico, that they're very strong. They're very, very strong. And hopefully MLS teams will get over the hump. I think we're there, obviously. I do think we're there. But you just have this funny feeling.
Call right now. Please leave your name, number, and message.
And John Jagu is supposed to be joining us and a little bit late at the moment, but we'll get him soon. And hopefully we'll have him on shortly as we talk about these fantastic games. Once again, Cruz Azul showing their dominance. And if you're curious to know what's going on with the Clausura season in the Liga MX right now, Cruz Azul is in first place with 20 points. Toluca is in second place with 25 points. And Club Tijuana is not in the playoff section, but they have 14 points and they're in 12th place. So you just hope that you see what's going on down in Mexico. And you hope, in all reality, you hope that, you know, these things can get better for MLS. But until then, you know, I just have to wait and see what's going to happen. Not really sure how it's going to happen, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what the situation will be. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you just hope to see the boys do well. And we'll hope to see. We'll see what happens as we move along here. So it's just one of the situations where, once again, it's a tough loss against these sides. But you know what? I don't know if the gap has really come close or it's been closed up a lot better. But, you know, once again, this is not about did you win your quarterfinal match. This is about can you score more goals against these opponents? Because this is one of those moments where you just have to say that MLS has to do better in. They have to do better at what is going on with the situation in these, CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals in any bracket to try and get as close as you can or try and being as equal as possible. And, you know, once again, waiting for John Jagu, who covers Liga MX and the Mexican national team for big soccer, to come on and join us as waiting for him to call in and hopefully he didn't forget, but that's okay. Or I'm trying to call. Maybe I forgot to tell him, so it's probably on the both of us, so we'll see what happens. But definitely it's one of those things where that, to be honest, you know, it's just you got to try again. You got to try again. We're going to find out who's going to qualify to finish up the list, to see who is going to face whom in the eight groups of three. Obviously, if you're curious to know, once again, who has qualified for the CONCACAF Champions League, I can get the list right now for the 2014-15 edition, as I'm going to scroll it up right here on my computer as we go ahead and take a look and see what's going to happen. And once again, the sides that won the 2013 Apertura Championship and the runners-up, it was Lyon that won the Apertura last year. The runners-up were Club America, and of course, MLS Cup champions last year, Sporting Kansas City, the New York Red Bulls as the Supporters Shield champions. The Portland Timbers were changed from the MLS Cup runners-up into a regular season conference winner in the West. That's not the Supporters Shield, and that's the Portland Timbers. And then DC United, of course, winning the U.S. Open Cup last year in 2013. So that's the six out of nine in the draw sections for the CONCACAF Champions League 2014-2015 edition. So we'll have to wait and see who's going to finish up when the Canadian Amway Championship gets underway, and see if we unfortunately we don't have John Jagu just yet. Hopefully we will see what's going to happen. And as we continue on here with who has made it from Costa Rica, the Invierno champion, Aluenza will be in it. Real España from Honduras for the 2013 Apertura season champion. Guatemala, Comunicaciones, also in the Apertura 2013 from Panama, Taro. And then El Salvador's representative from the 2013 Apertura is Isidro Metapan. And just waiting to see what's going to happen. Don't forget now, there's going to be the Caribbean gets three spots in their club tournament as they go forward here for the 14-15 CONCACAF Champions League. And once again, here's how for some of you that are wondering how this is going to get set up for the three spots, there's going to be nine clubs coming out here for the Caribbean Football Union tournament. Representing the Cayman Islands champions are Bodentown. Representing Curaçao champions is Centro Dominguito from Guadeloupe. Representing their championship, it's USR Santa Rose from Guyana. It's Alpha United. The champions of Haiti, Mirabalas. The runners-up, Valencia. From Jamaica, the National Premier League champions are Harborview, and the runners-up are Waterhouse, the league champion, league runners-up. From Puerto Rico, Bayamón FC. Of course, that's being run by by my good friend Ignacio Rodriguez. Now joining us is the gentleman that is always covering what goes on in Liga MX and the Mexican national team. It's John Jagu. John, thanks for joining me, and how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great, Daniel. Greetings from Morgantown, West Virginia. Sorry, I'm a little late. I thought I was supposed to come on at 8:15. So.
All right, Morgantown, West Virginia. No,
yeah.
If you want to come over and visit, I'll plan your route.
Well, that's a long way from here, that's for sure. But yeah. You know, the good thing about being in this part of the world is I get to have Yuengling. So that was nice.
Exactly. See, there's always a bright spot in every dark cloud. But anyway.
Yep.
Oh, man, John, I have to say, once again, the Liga MX sides have shown why they're so full of quality when they do take this tournament seriously. Cruz Azul versus Club Tijuana is going to be a great semifinal. Toluca also showing some good stuff against the Quakes, even though I think the Earthquakes kind of frustrated them a little bit, forcing them to go into penalties. But let's go straight to that first game against Club Tijuana and the Galaxy. Did you think that Tijuana basically took advantage of some poor markings by LA to get those first goals in the first half?
You know, soccer is always, I've always labeled it as a very imprecise sport. you know, guys try stuff all the time. And I mean, I was watching a Champions League game, when was it? I think it was Wednesday, where I think Robin Van Persie, I think it was, in the very beginning, like in the first 30 seconds of the game, was split the defenders and was wide open, but the midfielder didn't see him. He turned around and kicked to the defender, and Robin Van Persie just, like, just could not believe his bad luck. He's like, did you just see what I just did? And sometimes they try those passes, and sometimes they work. And, you know, and then, you know, if soccer was a more precise sport, then the scores would be a little bit more, there'd be a lot more scoring, let's just say that. You know, Tijuana, you know, they tried something. It worked, and they got it in the first minute. And I think it totally took Galaxy, just did it completely out of whatever game plan they had. It just completely ruined it, and they were shell-shocked. And what, 10 minutes later, they got another one by the same guy, Jaime Ayovi. And after that, I mean, I think it was academic. I think that the tie, you know, even though, you know, Galaxy didn't make it interesting at the end, I think the tie was settled at that point. Of course, they got the third one in that. Made the other goals, you know, nothing more than window dressing. But that was the one that really surprised me. I thought that of all the teams that were going to have a shot, just based on the fact that who they are and the fact that Tijuana just really hadn't been playing all that well this season, and especially at home. I mean, they've given up some just ugly score lines at home, that I thought the LA Galaxy had a real chance to advance. And it turned out not to be the case. And I think even Bruce Arena said it. He just said did he use the word terrible or awful in the first half? I forget which one. Whichever one it was, he was right. The Galaxy had, they got caught sleepwalking. And Tijuana, you know, the one thing about the Mexican sides is that, you know, they have, you know, some foreigners are good, you know, they're decent. Some are really good. And, you know, Tijuana, in this case, left their good, you know, the good guy who's been slumping on the bench, put Jaime Ayovi in. It was a great move that paid off, and now they have a chance to play Cruz Azul for the right to go to the final. And I think it's going to be a very exciting tie. You know, as far as MLS fans, I mean, they certainly, if they're looking for a team to root for, I mean, obviously Cholos will be the one just because of the amount of Americans that are on that side.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't even know if there are any Mexican players on that side, to be honest with you, because they'll tell you the Americans or Argentines or Colombians or Ecuadorians. I mean, there's very few, and I'm not kidding, there are very few Mexicans. I want to say it's one of the few sides that actually fields, less than five Mexicans when they start. So it's,
wow.
It's, you know, yeah, I mean, it's, of course, they have the Mexican Americans, and, you know, and they're counted, so to speak, you know, and I said that in air quotes, as Mexicans. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, they play for, you know, they're ineligible for their national team, and that, in my mind, doesn't make them, you know, Mexican, so to speak. So, they have, you know, all the Americans that play. They have, you know, their Colombian, you know, their South American contingency. So, like I said, there's just not that many Mexicans that play for Cholos. Now, one thing I will say about that game, and it's just, I mean, the Cholos goalkeeper, Salceda, I mean, to get, I mean, my God. I mean, there's nothing worse than I understand time wasting to a certain degree, but, I mean, you're not Brianna, you know, trying to protect a, you know, 3D, whatever it is. It was very disappointing to see that kind of, you know, even in this day and age, it's like, come on. But, you know, Tijuana, they got the job done, and away they go to play Cruz Azul.
You know, I have to say, there is a player that did play for the Red Bulls last year, and he just couldn't really stay after 1 year. His contract offer that he got from the Red Bulls, obviously it's not going to be a lot because they're kind of tight with the MLS salary cap, the Amado Moreno, the young kid who came over. Has he gotten any time for Tijuana when he went over on the free?
You know, honestly, Tijuana to me is like Seattle. I mean, they're so far out of my radar. Honestly, they play at a time, like their home games are usually on a Friday night. And, for the past, I don't know, 2 months, I've been working Friday nights. So I haven't been able to watch any of their, I mean, if I'm home on a Friday night, it's a miracle. And the last thing my wife's going to let me do is watch soccer. You know what I mean? So, So I just don't keep up with it's the fact that Tijuana is just a relatively new team, and, you know, and frankly, there aren't that many players on there that I would choose to follow. So I honestly just don't know. They're not a team that's on my radar.
Yeah, that's fine. That's no big deal. I'm just curious out of my end of it. But you're right, though. Cruz Azul, the right. I mean, my God. I mean, this is right now this is the Clausura leaders against the 12th standing club in the semifinals. And geez, I mean, it's like wave after wave after wave. I had Mike Kuhn from Kansas City on earlier because he says normally they were expecting them to come down the middle, but they abused Kansas City on the wings. And they, I mean, my God, I've never ever thought you'd ever see, I would say maybe a powerhouse right now in Liga MX, like Mariano Pavon. I mean, he was just fantastic. He's Argentinian, I believe, correct?
Yeah, he is. And you know, and the funny thing about him is that his, you know, a reputation that he's garnered, at least in Liga MX, is, you know, is a guy who just, you know, is one of those forwards that gets tons of opportunities but just doesn't close them out. He was able to close them out pretty well in when you get a first minute goal like that, you know, I think it gives folks, you know, just a ton of confidence. And I mean, you're right. That was a game where Cruz Azul used some of their more talented players in positions where they wouldn't normally play, like Marco Fabian, who was just up and down the wing. I mean, I don't know who the defender is for Kansas City, but he got toasted a few times. I think the one that was the real back burner was on the in the second half when Cruz Azul got their fourth goal. It's not very often that you see Mexican players out-muscle American players, that's what Fabian did, and he made a great play and kept the ball alive, found the guy with a pass of death, and then, you know, the goal that was ended up being put away by Formica. But they're just a great team, and I think that, you know, a player like Marco Fabian, who is on loan from Chivas, just to go mm-hmm. show you just how ridiculous the Chivas organization is, that a player like that go on loan, because instead of actually, you know, helping him out by putting, you know, players around him, they send him on loan to Cruz Azul, and Cruz Azul says, well, listen, you got a great team, you don't have to be the guy, you know, just be one of the guys. And it is mm-hmm. you know, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, now has a very, very good chance of not only playing in the World Cup, but I think, you know, is a guy that could certainly start. I mean, he's that talented, and I think that Cruz Azul, they've lost one game the whole tournament. They're just, at least in the local league. And on top of it, they're fun to watch. I mean, they are a fun team to watch. They have, good goalkeeping. Their defense is steady. Their midfield is fantastic. And, of course, their forwards are spectacular. And they've done a great job. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is due to the fact that Marco Fabian has, his reputation, at least, you know, what here in Guadalajara, that he's a party guy. You know, it always cracks me up, because just because you see a guy, you know, out, you know, having a good time, doesn't mean he's going to do that, you know, every night. And, you know, of course,
right.
In the day and age where people can, you know, snap photo of you and then put it online, you know, within seconds, that stuff can kind of get out of control. And, mm-hmm. like I said, I don't care what people do. If they're off talking, whatever they want.
That's absolutely
the way to see that. And, for people to think that, you know, especially – and I don't know if it's the same in other leagues, but for whatever reason in Mexico, you know, especially with the media, it's like the Madonna whore complex. You know, they want their players to be, you know, monks and saints off the field, but killers on it. And
mm-hmm.
you know, and it just cracks me. I mean, these guys are going to be able to do what they want. But Cruz Azul, I mean, I think that, you know, this is something we talked about before. I mean, they have to be the favorites after this thing. Obviously because of the fact they played so long in the league. They just got done this past weekend beating Tijuana at Cruz Azul with two fantastic goals by Marco Fabian. Now there's a bit of an issue, because the first leg is going to be at the same time as the U.S.-Mexico friendly, so it's going to be interesting to see how Cruz Azul handles this, because, I mean, this is going to be the only opportunity that Fabian has. Now, luckily, it's just the first leg. I think that's a huge difference. Because the second leg,
right.
I think it'd be a little, But since it's his first leg, I think that that we'll probably see Fabian play in Phoenix instead of in Tijuana. Hopefully, at least that's because it really is going to be his only opportunity to be seen by the coach.
You see, John, this is why the Star Trek transporter room hasn't been created.
No, you're right. Well, I tell you what, I always wanted to have one of those replicators. I'm not going to tell you what I would replicate, but it sure would be a lot of fun.
Well.
Now, the other game, you know, Toluca, I think you're right where San Jose is frustrated, but I just don't think that Toluca, you know, in addition to the fact that San Jose, you know, just really didn't exert themselves offensively as much as one would hope, especially being down 1-1.
Yeah.
I think Toluca just never had that sense of urgency until San Jose got their goal, and then but he said I was able to equalize about 10 minutes later. But
that was a hell of a shot, though. That equalizer was a hell of a shot.
Yeah, it was a great shot. Yeah, it was a fantastic shot, and. The penalties, though, I mean, that was just said. I mean, how can you not feel bad for San Jose when they lose them? I mean, it's one thing if your goalie stops it but to have the goalies, you know, stop them and have the balls bounce, you know, like, you know, 3 inches in, it was pretty rough. I certainly take my hat off to the Earthquakes. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure why I don't know if you saw this after the post game, but the Toluca coach Cardoso just bashing the MLS in general. So the dude just didn't seem like it was appropriate. You know, the stuff that he was saying.
I read that the coach for Toluca absolutely let the league have it. Jose Cardoso. It was on the soccer section of Yahoo Sports. I saw the article. Look, I mean, if he wants to say whatever he wants, I mean, it's fine. The point is, though, I think the best thing out of this whole thing was that the supporters of Toluca gave the Earthquakes a standing ovation. I thought very classy, great job by them. It was a hard-fought game, especially in the penalties. I really thought Wondolowski was going to get one past Talavera. But stupid me, I forgot about that great first leg he had at Buckshaw. So he's bound to make a save in one of the five opportunities before they went to extra kicks.
No, I mean, you're right. It was, Talavera is one of those guys who, trying to play himself into a World Cup spot. I got to tell you, it just cracks me up because, you know, would they ever say that about a Jose Mourinho team when he did the exact same thing when he was both at Chelsea and at Inter and just wherever else he goes against Barcelona and tries to eke out a result? You know, granted, I'm not comparing Toluca to Barcelona, but, I mean, it's just a tactic in one game. I mean, those guys, they knew they had to get an away goal, and they knew that if, as we saw in the other two games, that if they concede in the first half, chances are it was going to get really ugly. So to compare that game to the whole league, I think was a little out of line. And it's so out of character for him too, because he's just not that. I mean, he's not that kind of guy. He's not that kind of, that is not his personality. So it was a little taken aback. You know, the other thing is we don't know what kind of questions they were asking him too. So we just saw the soundbite. So maybe it was. I'm not saying it was taken out of context or anything. Maybe it was just a response to something. But anyway. It just seemed a little odd coming from him because that's just not. I mean, he's one of the all time greats in the league, especially at Toluca. We just scored just a ton of goals, and it certainly has exalted status in Mexico, and he's got his team playing great. So it just seemed a little weird for me that he would choose that time to do that. So,
well, you know the Mexican media a lot more than I do, John. So you probably are thinking to yourself, you know, they're being taken out of context. So I'll go along with you on this one. I mean,
I watched the coverage afterwards, and it was just the same old thing where I said, well, you know, they just think, you know, we're talking about, oh, you know, this is just, you know, just another example of how the league is just infinitely superior to the Major League Soccer. And, you know, granted, I think that the results were a little, but this is something we talked about last week, too. I mean, if you know, we knew that the chances are that if they got early goals, it was going to get ugly. It didn't really have nothing to do with how each league stands. I think that, you know, it just turned out that the teams that were playing are really good teams. And, you know, that's mm-hmm. – I think that they could have done that to a lot of folks. But, you know, I think that the MLS is going to break through eventually. I think it's going to happen sooner than later. And but I think that the MLS has to learn that they can't go to Mexico and think that a one or even a two-goal lead is enough. I mean, they really have to try and pour it on, you know, if they have the first leg at home against Mexican sides. The one thing I will say, though, is that I think that it's time for CONCACAF Champions League to limit the MLS. There's no reason the MLS should have four teams in this tournament. I mean, that's just reality. I think that they should probably trim it down to three and let you know another club's or another country's club get a shot. Mm-hmm. Just because of the fact that they haven't, I don't think they've done anything to earn that fourth team, other than the fact that CONCACAF is just dying for an MLS team to make it to the final, because they think, you know, they see the U.S. as like some untapped market, so to speak. I just know that they're just, you know, if Galaxy would have won that game, I guarantee you they would have reshuffled the brackets to say, you play Alajuelense, and then the Mexican sides play that, and then whoever wins, you know, the non-Mexican bracket will get the second. I guarantee you that would happen.
So basically, John, there would still be CONCACAFing going, huh? No.
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt that would happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I understand where you're coming from. I mean, maybe because they took away the MLS Cup runner-up spot for that one, and they gave it to the team that wins first place in the conference that's not the Supporters Shield winner. So if you're saying Open Cup champion, Supporters Shield champion, MLS Cup champion, you know what? I really don't have an argument with you. I would definitely agree. I'd make it a lot harder on the MLS teams to actually get into the CONCACAF Champions League if they can. But then the question is, who would you give that that open free spot to then? Would you give it to the defending champion?
Well, honestly, I mean, I love the tournament. I think it's a great tournament, but I think it's too much. I think that in my opinion, I think there's too many teams. I think, you know, they did trim it down a little bit and had the eight groups of three or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just seems like, you know, why don't we just go back to doing four groups of four and then do it that way instead of, you know.
Yeah.
It just seems like 24 teams is too much for this region. Let's build it, and then let's let's see where we stand in a few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so, you know how some people are. Got to have success right now. Got to have a success right now. You can't wait. It's got to be right now. All right, John. Listen, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you next time. Hopefully, you'll be free for USA Mexico. Post game, you free for that one?
I probably will be. I'm going to be somewhere because I'm doing a couple of basketball games. We don't know where it's going to be yet, so I'm going to be somewhere in lower 48. I'm not going
no
to.
Problem.
I have no idea where it's going to be. So yeah, but I'll definitely check in.
All right, thank you very much. Have a good night, John. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Daniel. Have a great weekend. Bye bye.
Thank you. You too. Bye bye. It's John Jagu, covers the Mexican national team as well as Liga MX sides for Big Soccer. And, well, that's it. This will do it for the CONCACAF Champions League coverage. Hopefully we'll have John Jagu back on when we get to the final. Obviously, there will be soccer involved, and we'll have him on. But once again, Major League Soccer gets bounced away and out from the after the quarterfinals are over, three up and three down. Let's see what happens with what goes on with the Red Bulls, DC United, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas City once again get the second crack at the CONCACAF Champions League. I want to thank my guests once again. It's John Jagu, Lisa Erickson, Adam Serrano, and Mike Kuhn. Thank you guys for your help, and thank you everybody. Join me again this coming Tuesday. Great show for you on For Your Scenes Fire, the American soccer show of choice here on blogtalkradio.com. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. Talk to you soon this coming Tuesday. Once again, we're going to talk about a national television contract. Thank you for listening. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.